the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. This is number 112.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier, is it 114 or something? I last count after one, so I believe it is 112.
Did you get a haircut? What's with that hat?
I did get a haircut too, but no, I'm just freezing. I'm under a register and everything. I'm fucking cold, man. So I'm just sitting here freezing my balls off.
Is this content for the show? What is this? Is this a bit? The haircut, the hat, and the register? Did I miss this?
The whole nine yards. Everything's a bit. What do you think? No, this is a live audio stuff or live video, actually. This is definitely real. We live it. We breathe it. We are it. So, yeah, man. I'm sitting under a freezing cold register. I should plug that stupid
thing. It's good to see you in any case. I know both of us are taking time off from playing Tears of the Kingdom, which, you know, to be honest with you, I really want to play after this, so short after show probably. We got lots to talk about, though, okay? First of all, Len, we got to talk about the sponsors. We got EasyDNS, one sponsor. We got EasyDNS. It is the best place for you to become a sovereign content hoster, a sovereign emailer, a sovereign server. Mark started all kinds of stuff going on over there. They got domains, DNS, web hosting, VPS hosting. So if you run a node, you run a BTC pay server. I know some of you do. Some of you have shops online, so you can use it for that. Nasa relays, other stuff as well. Get your email away from prying eyes at Gmail, sir.
NIP fives, you can't forget about that too. That's another
NIP fives, yes, also for Nasa, right? I believe, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you got all kinds of stuff for Nasa and other implementations that you might want to think about looking at. They got the email migration tool as well, so it's not just like you gotta, you know, sign up, pay 50% off, of course, and then you do it all yourself. They have the help tools and the helpful staff as well. GPG encrypted email forwarding, which is dope. You add a GPG key to your email, they encrypt it before the next hop, and so you can encrypt it so that even EasyDNS can't read it. You can't beat that. And you can either get this stuff standalone or as a bundle, whatever. All we ask is that you tell Mark that we sent you, use our code CBP Media, all that good stuff. You guys know the deal, man. You guys know the deal. Len, yeah, people claiming you're an AI version of yourself. This hat's throwing me off. We gotta find out what is inside that bucket. This is important.
I got really short hair. I got almost nothing. I'm freezing. I'm freezing. I'm a true Bitcoiner. I get my hair cut here at home. And the money, the $25 I save, I've been doing it for years, it goes right into Bitcoin. Screw spending it at the barber. Just do it at home. And
get it is important. Commentary in the chat here from people near and dear to you.
Well, perhaps she's the one that did it.
Interesting.
Maybe it was not the designed outcome, but it turned out that's what we got in the end. And oh, well, we'll see
what happens. During the early days of COVID, long before this show, long before we were public faces, my wife, I asked her to give me a fade. And so a fade is when you basically like turn the side a little shorter than everywhere else. And then you kind of pull it away as you get up to the top of the scalp. And I'll tell you, Len, it looked like Louis Braille was holding the barber tools that day. It was a sad state of affairs. And I did the same thing you did. I didn't shave it right down to the wood. I was still carrying a little bit of fuzz on top. But anyway. Okay, so housekeeping. Last week, Simon Bélanger, great guest. We had a great discussion on all things Canadian markets, American markets, some more insight into the banks, and some talk about pensions, exposure to Bitcoin, things like that. Simon's a good Bitcoiner. I think he most closely resembles Len and I. Like, I know Len and I both have, you know, other investments besides Bitcoin. And, you know, I may not put as much into those things as I used to, but I still have them and I still find them valuable. There's a time and a place for all that stuff. And I think he was a lot of fun to talk to. And he, as always, you know, I always like to say that we talked to the guests afterwards. Him and I spoke for 10 or 15 minutes, and he's so nice. I mean, Simon is so nice. And I'll be meeting his colleague, Daniel Foch, in the summertime. He's doing a panel with the Carrazzas on real estate and Bitcoin. So looking forward to that. And that's all the housekeeping I think we have here. Unless you got some boosts or whatever.
Yeah, we always get boosts, tons of them every week. And this week is no exception. So we'll start off with the top one. Holda 8388 and a whole bunch of other numbers writes in, the Bank of Canada just posted a public survey about their getting ready to launch CBDC. Can you blast a message far and wide so that as many people yelling at them to shove it as possible? So we did talk about it last week. And thank you for bringing it up again. He says, by the way, the war on drugs is BS and people not being thrown into cages for doing them is a good thing. Retarded Vancouver homeless policies are a separate issue.
Much oh my God, he dropped the regarded in the boost?
Yeah, he sure did. So Norman Remnant writes in, my dad, holding out on getting Canadian citizenship because of the monarchy, Bitcoiner of the week. You know what? That story, I still kind of laugh at that, but it benefited me in one way, and I could talk about it off air. Rander writes in the name of the Father, the Son, and the market conditions. Amen. And lastly, Doug and Roop writes in, God bless the penis moaner. Mower, sorry. This is the guy that mowed the penis in the lawn slightly before the coronation of the king.
Right.
And while Britain is all sorts of messed up, we still got a sense of humor. Whoever did that, man, that guy was absolute jokes for doing that. And the timing of it, magnificent.
It was Meghan Markle that did it.
Is she like, is she there or anything?
She's the princess. Are they called, they're not princesses. It's something else.
Duchess.
She's the Duchess of, is it York? One of them is York. Maybe the other one is someone else. I don't know. There's two kids.
Windsor?
Two wives.
I have no clue. I'm just throwing on names
here. I'm not a big monarchy guy. So we got a lot to talk about. This is, I got to be honest with you, Len. I have done zero prep work. I spent all my weekend. I went to see Hamilton, the musical.
Where did you see Hamilton, the musical, by the way? It's interesting.
Mervish.
In Toronto. So you saw Hamilton in Toronto. It seems.
Yeah.
Kind of strange,
I went to see it and my wife got these tickets like before COVID, and so they just rescheduled it for Saturday. So I went down there for the afternoon. It's too bad because Mario Gibney wanted to meet up and I just didn't have time to see him. We were going to go to the anti-capitalist coffee shop, which closed down. And I got to say, this month or something, they probably can't make rent. Turns out it's not pay when you can when the landlord is involved. So anyway, the musical is pretty good, I got to say. I understand why people don't like it. I'm not going to get into that on air, but I have always been a fan of musicals because it looks hard and it looks like something I can't do. And I always appreciate when someone can do something I can't do and they do it well like that. And of course, the story of establishing America is incredible. The Publius Confederate papers and all this, it's a great story, and it's obviously true as well. So there you go. And then obviously, Len, you know, not to
history is written by the victors, by the way.
That's right. That's a story or a song in the show, I'm pretty sure. It may not be exactly that. Well, I guess we're going to talk about Zelda in the after show, so we can just get into Bitcoin stuff right now if you want, unless you got something else to say before we start.
No, let's rip the price. You got that handy? If not, I got the Canadian price handy to keep you busy.
Looks like it's loading behind me. $27,310 US. Great timing. Thank you, CoinKite.
Yeah, so not too bad. So $36,700. And 64 in Canadian dollars. So there must have been a bit of a pump in the last 24 hours. But to be honest, I haven't been following the price that closely. It's in the ear, one ear and out the other for me. I don't really care about it. But let's talk about some Bitcoin-related news, Joey. There's been a lot that's happened on this front. And this week, again, is another one. We could talk about exchange news right off the bat. And let's talk about the big news we heard this past week, Bull Bitcoin. They released a new way for people to purchase KYC. KYC free sats. And this is a big thing because previously the only way you could get KYC free Bitcoin in Canada, one of the more prominent ways to do it was at Bitcoin ATM. But with the Bull Bitcoin, while the process is slightly different, you have to load up your account by going to Canada Post, which of all places to do it. And you have to load up the QR hub over there. So you present them with a QR code, which is the load hub, and they are able then to, you know, take your money and add it to your Bitcoin account. Of course, you also have to do the approval of the email and also provide a name. Note, you should not have multiple accounts with Bull. This is against internal policy. So you have the option to delete your original account if you are making a new one, just FYI. And the way to do that is on the top right-hand corner, there is the little icon for messaging. You just let them know through the message that you want it deleted and they'll do it. There's no way to do it yourself. It's got to be done internally. Now, I don't know if I mentioned it already, but this way gets you more sats. It's a cheaper method than the ATM. In my personal opinion, the ATM method is easier
that's just my own opinion, but the bull method is the best bang for the buck. And they're not the only ones that had some exchange news this past week. ShakePay came out and they're changing the shaking sats, the whole process over there. Now there's going to be a two-tiered system. Oh man. So there's going to be the active and inactive shakers. Inactive shakers, you are only going to be getting 21 sats per day per shake, regardless of your streak. Active users, it's going to be part of the old system where you can work your way up to 1,000 sats per day if you shake have a shake streak for 365 straight days. But to be considered active, you have to have made a transaction in the last week. And after 7 days, if you haven't made a transaction, you're moved to the inactive pile. So you could then transfer back and forth to inactive to active to inactive just by simply making a transaction within the past week. But here's the last one I have, which is kind of interesting. I'm not sure if you heard this one, but Binance is announced they are leaving the Canadian market. Don't have too much coverage right now. They left the Ontario market some time ago because the Ontario Securities Commission gave them the heave-ho, but they've been operating in other parts of Canada, and it looks like they decided to step away from it. They tweeted out, and it says, unfortunately, new guidance related to stable coins and investor limits provide to crypto exchanges make Canada, the Canadian market, so no longer tenable for Binance at this time. And the new guidance from CSA back in February must have initiated all this. They required approval for all the exchanges to continue doing business in Canada. And they did this under the guise of protection of the consumer. So Binance decided, you know what? We're not no longer going to do business here. Interesting, because CZ is a Canadian citizen, but he's not going to be operating in the country which he has citizenship. So there you go. That's all I got to say about the exchange side of things. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that, Joey.
Big time. That's a huge set of news, man. That might be the biggest set of Canadian stories we've done on the show that weren't related to laws. Okay, so first thing, bull. There's a couple things to note here. One is that KYC has become very important to you and I. And I think very important to a lot of other people who realize that the clamps are starting to come down, the terrain is starting to take shape in the distance. It's not going to be easy. Excuse me, I have a bit of a hiccup here. To spend Bitcoin anonymously, let's say, in the future. More and more tools are coming out on the side of surveillance parties, we'll call them. Punishments are going to, I think, start to show and they're going to be significantly more detrimental to the space, I think, than people realize. Certainly, they'll be discouraging to people who are thinking about transacting anonymously. And the other thing is that there's too many places, thanks to poor coin privacy, that a lot of people, even if they're trying to use a non-KYC coin, they'll ruin their own security model by mixing wallets or mixing coins. I guarantee it. We've talked about it a million times on the show. We talked about it with Matt. We talked about it with Francis. You got to be so careful mixing UTXOs. And so if you're going to use a service like Bull, or if you're going to use Bitcoin Well, or if you're going to use another non-custodial service, my suggestion to you is do it on a new hardware device with a new set of keys and a new wallet address. That would be my sincerest advice to you, listener, viewer, because it's just easier to separate church and state this way. And on the side of Bull itself, you can use debit at the post office to fill these load QR codes. Don't do it. Use cash if you can. Try and obfuscate the trail as much as possible if that's what you're interested in. Of course, this is not financial advice. It's just for educational purposes. This is how I would do it hypothetically. The other thing I'll say, Len, and I'd be curious what you think, how long is this going to last? It's really interesting because Canada Post, is allegedly an arm's length Crown Corporation. Like, I don't know exactly the nature of that outfit and its relationship to the government. So, what are the odds that happens? I'll also add that if you go to use this service, I tried it last week on the day it came out. It's very slick. They're more accessible than ATMs. Everyone's got a Canada Post near them, probably as a point of policy from Canada Post and the federal government. It's incredibly fast. It's not like Canada Post doesn't know who you're sending the money to, because there's a receipt that comes out and it says Bull Bitcoin on the receipt. So I'm curious what you think. You're the sort of more more willing to pour cold water on stuff like this. I know you and I have a chat where I get excited about things all the time and you're like, yeah, but what about this? Do you have a view on how long something like this will last using an outfit like Canada Post?
I have no data to say if it's going to be short or long because I have no comparable. I hope it is going to last a long time because Canada Post is taking a fee. And depending on how much it is you deposit, you put into your account, there is a processing fee that Canada Post takes. And it's $3.50 or $3.95. I forget what the number is. So they're taking something. And it's beneficial to them to do so because they are trying to get revenue any way, shape, or form. So who's going to give them the kibosh to say, like, who's going to give them the heave-ho and say, don't do this any further? It'd have to come from the people above them pulling the strings. I don't know how long. Could be months, could be days, could be weeks, years. I have no clue. What I would suggest, if you are interested in KYC free sats, definitely look into this because you don't know if it could be here today, gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
But again, I stress the easier of the two, although more expensive, is the ATM. It's just not as accessible because Canada Posts are everywhere. In fact, there's more Canada Posts in Canada, sorry to interrupt you, than there are Tim Hortons.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
How do they define Canada Post? How do they define Canada Post? Like one of those kiosks, mailboxes? Like what is it?
Good question, but I assume it's just like anything along those lines. But I check the numbers. There's more, as they say, Canada Post within Canada than there are Tim Hortons. And I was shocked by that. I thought for sure it was the other way around. So that goes to show you how readily available it is.
Yeah, Francis and team put together a pretty good document. I thought was, if not comprehensive, it was very well thought out and digestible for the average person, whether you're in Bitcoin or not, the reasons why they do stuff. I'll just add that so now Bull has basically anonymous buys plus coin mixing on the way out for $3.50, the Canada Post fee, plus their spread is what, 2%, something like that. It barely moves the needle when you think about what you're getting. It's a big thing. And so when you compare that to what you're seeing at ShakePay, ShakePay, obviously, you know, friends of ours, they were our first and we were there first, as Carlo once said at a meetup. How do you, I don't want to say that ShakePay is going the wrong direction. I don't know, but I look at the stuff that really, and we've talked about this before, you and I, the way to get people to use the product, the suite of products you have, if you're a Bitcoin company, is to make sure people buy their Bitcoin with you. And ShakePay's got a great suite of products. A lot of you guys use the card. A lot of you guys do shaking sats. A lot of you guys had the ping pong thing. They had the yield account for a while. They had to close that down because of some legal stuff, I'm sure. And there's been other stuff as well along the way that I'm sure I'm forgetting. It's just been so much. But for people to use those services, they have to want to buy Bitcoin there. No one is putting CAD on their ShakePay card just because they want to use the card. At least I don't think. They probably use the card and buy Bitcoin. It's probably some kind of split. And Jordab in the chat points out that one transaction lend could also include a use of the card. So you don't have to buy Bitcoin. You could just use the card. But all that to say, this is like a half-baked thought, but the moats, like I talked about last week during the rise in fees, are starting to evaporate. It's just not enough. They're not making enough money on the spread anymore to keep people on board. They had to cut something, right? So they cut Shaking Sats, really their most iconic offering. You know, it's in the name, for God's sakes. It's what they're known for. I look at Bitcoin Well too. You know, obviously Adam, friend of the show, they're introducing a dynamic fee structure, right? So they're feeling the pinch a little bit as well. And those moats, a lot of companies were eating that cost because it was so low. That cost is not going to be low forever. It was never going to be low to settle on chain forever. It's not the way this is going to work. We talked about this a dozen times over the last 2 years, you know, if not more. And I'm curious about what the next moat is. To me, looking at the non-KYC landscape, it looks like the next moat is whether or not you're the first mover. And I look at Bull doing this. It's the most convenient. You know, I know that you're, you know, I don't want to say you're partial to the ATMs, but the ATMs offer some benefits that maybe Bull doesn't necessarily offer. But I think that spread, you know, what is it, 15% or 11% or something like that at some ATMs, sometimes even higher. Plus, if you have to pay the fees, the network fees, plus if you can't, you know, you can't bump for fee or reduce fee after the fact. I look at all this stuff and what I see is a first mover here. This is a first move in the non-KYC structure. The question, I think the most important question still for me, and I think probably for you too, is how long is it going to last? I love Bulls company. Francis obviously was on the show, like true remnant. It's just, there's no way for these companies to guarantee that this lasts into the future, because at some point, if we all agree on the outcome here that the government's going to clamp down on this stuff, then Canada Post will be in the crosshairs, or Bull with Canada Post will be in the crosshairs. So a lot of people in the chat, Boomer, saying they've been working on this for a long time. I think you're probably right. And I trust Francis to see this through however he can. Someone else noted that Kraken runs a similar QR code loading thing. Only thing is Kraken is KYC. So I don't know. It's all very new, but what I see here is two exchanges moving in opposite directions, right? One moving in a way to get you to spend your Bitcoin, use fiat tools, and then the other one going the other direction, try and take your fiat, give you Bitcoin the best way they know how. Who's going to be more successful in the future? I'm not sure, but certainly here some divergence starting to appear in the Canadian exchange landscape.
Yeah, let's move on, Joey, because there's still a heck of a lot more to talk about. We could talk about that topic for forever, but no, let's talk about Not Your Keys, Not Your Coin. And we mentioned this quite often in the show, and we can start off with the UK, the tax authorities over there. They have announced that they might start seizing Bitcoin held on exchanges from businesses who fail to pay on their taxes. And obviously, everybody out there should pay the taxes that you are supposed to pay. So don't stop or avoid paying them. You're just going to have to pay the piper in the end. But this points out that custodial exchanges should be avoided because of a multitude of reasons. And there's more information here for Not Your Keys, Not Your Coin. BlockFi, their users got some bad news because there was a ruling that came out from a U.S. judge, and customers don't have rights to the $300 million of the digital assets, mostly shitcoins that were held onto by BlockFi at the time they filed for bankruptcy. And the assets were in interest-bearing accounts, and those are the ones, unfortunately, that they gave up ownership and right or ownership rights. So the terms and conditions people should have read, because from what I gather here, the U.S. judge is simply reiterating what was on it, the T's and C's. So it's not something that is just they're pulling out of the blue. If you are putting an interest-bearing account on something like BlockFi, well, potentially they could keep it if they go bankrupt. This is not something that should be sideswiping people. They're unsecured creditors, and that's the reality of it. But more stories here. From CoinDesk. They talk about Quadriga news, and the bankruptcy claimants will only be getting 13 cents on the dollar. So this is another Not Your Keys, Not Your Coin situation. The Quadriga's estate, they owe $300 million or so in Canadian across 17,000 or so claimants. And this is creditors, including, get this, Joey, Canada Post, and also the Canadian Revenue Agency. So there's a few Canadian departments or whatever that they're going to be part of this whole creditor situation. But so they're going to be paying out the value of, quote, the crypto. This will be pegged as of April 15th, 2019. And I took a look at Bitcoin's price that day. It was $5,100. And right now, what is it sitting at? $2,700. So it's quite a big difference. This is, like, again, Not Your Keys, Not Your Coin. These custodial exchanges, this is an example. You leave it there, you get rugged. You might get something back years later, but these guys are getting 13 cents on the dollar. So very sad stuff. So take action and do something about whatever you have on exchanges.
How many people in Canada and the US, I don't want to talk about the US because I don't know if it's law over there too, looking at that BlockFi thing where basically their clientele, as you mentioned, unsecured depositors, are bailing in BlockFi's bigger creditors, right? Their priority creditors. They're taking that $300 million and change, and they're going to pay out some amount of cents on each dollar that they're owed, or that they owe, I should say. How many people in TradFi are looking at that and laughing and going, you know, this is what you get. You got the rug pulled on you. How many of those people are Canadian and realize that we have the bail-in legislation codified here? The bank, any major Canadian bank, probably any Canadian financial institution really, can seize deposits to pay creditors at any time. So it's not like this is, if you think BlockFi was bad, wait till you read the T's and C's at your bank. It's way worse. And at least BlockFi, when they take your money, you can go to court. Good luck taking TD to court. I don't think there's going to be any courts that take you seriously trying to sue one of the big four here, or one of the credit unions, or the government, or the CRA. That money's not yours. It's theirs. and more people are realizing this. I heard Dr. St. Ange on Marty's show, who I would love to have on this show at some time. I got to reach out to him, talking about how the thing people think is a dollar in the bank is actually the furthest thing from what is actually going on, right? It's an unsecured loan, basically. And the bank can do with it whatever it wants. In fact, it does in the case of some of these banks that went under, whether it's buying duration mismatched assets or duration mismatched assets. Try and say that five times fast. Or investing in tech startups, or, you know, going to the craps table for all I care. It's all the same when the money drops to zero. Doesn't matter what you did with it. Doesn't matter what your intentions were. It's not yours. You're not getting it back. This is it, right? And so I caution people who are dunking on BlockFi creditors and saying, look, I told you so. This whole thing was a scam. You got to read the T's and C's of your own bank account. They are far worse. I promise you that.
Yeah, just think about it. I mean, from the point of view of the bank, say you, Joey, are a bank, and I give you and a whole bunch of people give you your money or to hold on to it. The money itself is not going to make anything for you as a bank. You have to do something. You have to, quote unquote, invest it somewhere. Not everything is without risk. And when risk then comes up and you get snake eyes, well, I feel the pain as a customer, unfortunately. That's just the way it is. And people don't realize things have been good for so long. And once they go bad, look out. But let's move on. We could talk about the mempool, and that's clearing up. And this is, I think it's a good time to talk about ordinals. And I hear people out there, they're fucking groaning. And every time I talk about ordinals, a little piece inside me dies a slow death. And once these stories emerges, but there's been a lot of these BRC20 tokens, and they have been reportedly being disappearing from people's wallets. And this is kind of funny. One person reported minting a token and then getting it unminted shortly thereafter. And he had to pay a very high price because it was unminted at a time when the high network fees were in place. And he paid more in this whole thing than what he could conceivably get. For this, I'm not sure why this is disappearing from people's wallets. I perceive it might have something to do with the off by one bug that somebody introduced not too long ago, but I could be wrong. I'm not sure. And if you really want to know about these BRC20 tokens and if they are a scam, this is going to basically solidify this point. BitBoy, he's minted his own fucking token called Ben. And that's it. That it just shows you the BRC is garbage. And not only that, there were even some people trying to take advantage of yield slash staking with BRC20 tokens. It came out just today that they're looking at the process of this. More fucking scams alongside it. But alongside this, Sailor was on Patrick Bet-David's show, and he was talking about inscribing and the utility behind it. So I could see his point. He was saying that you could put a will on there for a fraction of the cost you would if you would try to find anywhere else. So I don't want to go into that. It just goes to show you that some people are looking at it a little bit differently, but the reality is right now with all this garbage is causing people to pay a lot more for transactions. Miners must be loving it. And to date, 14,000 BRC20 tokens, 14,000 have been minted with a total supply of 420 quadrillion tokens. That's going to be how many US dollars that are going to be in circulation soon. The total market cap of all these BRC20 tokens approached $1 billion. Now, has scaled back significantly from there, but this has also taken the eyes of some developers, Luke Dash Jr., Luke Dashier, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He wrote in the Bitcoin mailing list that action should have been taken months ago as spam filtration is included with Bitcoin Core. So again, with this coming out, looks like developers are trying to see what they can to erase this garbage from ending up on our nodes. But the last thing I have to say, Binance, they are trying to take advantage here, not to miss out on an opportunity. The Pepe futures, you can now do 100x leverage trades on that on Binance. What a fucking joke. Let's this stuff just fucking die in the vine and we'll move on, man. This sucks.
The Canadian Bitcoin Conference, for which everyone should buy a ticket. If you don't have a ticket yet, let me know. They are trying to get CZ to come back home and do a panel. And someone, I think it was maybe Plate Liquor, was like, yeah, how about like a working vacation? Come back home. It's unbelievable, this guy. He was a favorite of ours last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever the fee market was like insanely high, because Binance was saying, we're going to roll out Lightning now. And, you know, that's exactly, you're giving thumbs up. That's a thumbs up move. But then Pepe Futures, oh my God, it's just unbelievable. I should know, and you and me talked about this a bunch, and other people like Matt and Marty make bets on the mempool almost every week, it seems like, or it's the same bet they're just talking about. It's only 46 sats per V-byte right now. I just went to look. So if you want a high priority transaction, next block, 46 sats per V-byte, it's about $1, $2, maybe something like that. Look, all this other stuff, Len, there's grifters all over the place. Everyone knows that that BitBoy guy is like, you know, out for his own pockets. Everyone's out for their own pockets. You have to imagine that, including you and me. And I don't understand. I would have understood why people fall for something like this, or how people fall for something like this 2 years ago. I would have got it, because NFTs were hyped up and everyone was talking about Bitcoin being old and boring and boomer coin and all this stuff. And then all that stuff fell apart and went to zero. The guys who minted the tokens, whether it was an airdrop, an NFT, whatever, they struck it rich while retail got shat on, right? Status quo. It's the MO. How are you still falling for this now? It's almost unbelievable to me this is still going on. And I just want to add one more thing here. Anytime someone tries to sell you anything to do with Pepe, it should be a red flag, right? That's your Nigerian prince moment. If you're still reading after Pepe, you're the dumb guy they're looking at and trying to get money from. So I don't know. I almost want to ask you, since you brought up ordinals for the first time in like 6 months, do you think
I brought it up a few weeks ago.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember now. Do you think that the fee market is in a lull, or do you think that we'll see another rebound? You know, I almost want to call it an attack. I think some people who are perpetrating that traffic would call it an attack. And I say that because they were hosting these spaces called We Broke Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. Do you think we're likely to see something else like that? Or you think that, unlike NFTs and stuff, since this actually has a cost, it's, sort of going to be a permanent cheap market until they come up with something cheaper, freer? I don't know. What do you think?
No, it'll come back. If the price of Bitcoin starts to rip, it's the rising tide that lifts all ships, and all these shitcoins, these BRC20 tokens, are also going to experience some sort of pump as well. And people are going to be out there trying to mint new tokens, pumping them up and trying to trade them as much as possible. So this is going to happen. And as they do that, the mempool is going to get filled up again. So the transaction fees are going to be more costly. So also, another thing to consider is the price of Bitcoin does go up. It's probably more likely that, even without the ordinals and the inscribing of these BRC20 tokens, that the price of network fees will go up as well. So even right. without that in the equation, it would probably still go up. So including that, we're not going to be in a cheap fee environment forever. It's going to be a flow, for sure.
I know it's going to have a flow, but I'm curious specifically about like what the next thing is. We had the ordinals inscriptions. I know BRC is kind of in that.
It's going to come back.
Yeah, it might, but like also I saw that thing about yield today as well. Like how can that work? I got to look into this, but to me, I just don't know how that would work on Bitcoin. Like there's no mint mechanism here. That's not how this works. So what are they? You don't know either. I don't know.
I can't tell you the technicals behind it, but this is something that is being inscribed. So maybe they could add some additional commands or additional coding in the whole inscription process, and through that they were able to generate some sort of yield or something along those lines. I don't know, but just more garbage. And that's what's going to come up again. You'll see it, it's going to clog up.
Sailor's not the only one, by the way. Mark Jeftovic talked on his show about inscribing, like naming stuff. It was on Your Life, Your Terms, actually, with Tom and Nick.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, so this, I mean, a lot of people have their hammer and want to see things as a nail, as Mark says. I don't know. I don't want to say that we're not qualified to talk about it, but we are not qualified enough to say that it's good or bad in all these cases. I don't know. I have no idea.
As I said, it's not an attack. It's just in a nuisance right now. Let's move on to Tether. Some Tether news came out. Seems that they are doing quite well. And this is with the numbers that they showed us this past week. And BDO Italia was the one that was responsible for the attestation. And the net profit for this quarter that they reported was $1.48 billion. That's quite a bit of money. And they're holding in total reserves, 2% is in Bitcoin, 4% is in gold. And if you look at their reserves, there has been a massive reduction in the bank deposits. I'm not sure if this is by design or just a fluke, but the fact that we have now banks collapsing in the United States, it's probably a good move not to have as much exposure into this. So in my personal opinion, this is a good decision on their part. They say that they hold direct U.S. T-bills holdings of over $53 billion. And this represents more than 64% of their total reserves. So they're banking on the T-bills to provide them with liquidity and stability moving forward. And in fact, the fact they keep buying more Bitcoin, it may happen that one day they might have more Bitcoin on their balance sheet than even MicroStrategy if they continue at this pace.
Yeah.
And well, I'll leave it at that. I mean, I have an interesting take on this. I want to hear your thoughts and before I bring up something.
I like it, but are they buying the Bitcoin with Tether or are they buying it with US dollar deposits? Like that's really the thing that you have to know, and the attestation doesn't tell you that. This is at the core of the Tether truther case, right? That no one knows how much money they have, no one knows where it is, and no one knows if the Tether's in circulation, mint and burn with deposits and withdrawals. And if they're buying it with USDT, then this really looks bad. Doomberg, his most convincing case, and he's not the only one who makes it, is that the Bitcoin price is propped up by USDT Bitcoin buys, that exchange rate's not legitimate, and that the dollars in that Tether system are not backed by US treasuries, US dollars, paper, gold, nothing. If that's the case, that's a big problem. If it's not the case, then, you know, we're off to the races. But this is ultimately as well, you know, the thing is that if this all happens really quickly, right? If a currency fails or the US dollar starts to wobble or something, it won't matter how Tether got the Bitcoin. They'll have it. It won't matter if they scammed their way into it with shitty USDT that wasn't backed by anything. But if the failure is slow, it'll be a problem for them. It'll be uncovered, I think, fairly quickly when people start to look for where Bitcoin is and who's got it and how they got it. So I'm glad to see they're doing it. I don't want to say scoff at, but I'm puzzled by the gold position given the size of the Bitcoin position. Clearly, your conviction is in one and not the other. It's not really a hedge at 4%. So I don't know. Weird, I guess, asset allocation strategy. But anyway, what do you think?
I think those allocations will grow over time as they continually get profit and they could allocate that to buying stuff like gold and Bitcoin. But the one thing I ask, and hopefully you or somebody in the audience could answer this for me, is the T-bills, when they mature, who pays this? Is it directly from the treasury or is it from whoever sold it to them? And whoever sold it to them, where do they buy this? When they buy these T-bills, do they buy directly from the treasury or is there somebody in the middle that is involved? I'd love to know this because the reason I'm asking, potentially the United States can look at Tether and say, this is a threat to our sovereignty, to our currency, because they are able to mint new US dollars in a digital form, so to speak. I know you're taking a US dollar and minting it at the same time, but there's concerns about if indeed it's totally backed one-to-one. And if it's not, well, then they are simply minting new US dollars in a digital form. If I do the same thing in my basement in a physical form, then that's an interesting thought there that the Tether is owned by the Fed. But if I start minting US dollars in my basement, I go to jail. So they're doing it digitally. Does that make them a threat to the United States dollar? And if they decide this, because the United States will say, okay, look, these guys, they're more happy, it seems, with Circle than they are with Tether. Right. That's what seems the regulators are. So at least regulators don't like Tether as much as they like Circle. So if they're eyeballing and saying, look, Tether is probably the enemy, these T-bills they have, could they theoretically just make them null and void? And if they do that, doesn't it rug pull the whole Tether operation if they have 64% of their reserves in T-bills? I wonder. Because what they're doing right now is the United States is paying them to buy more Bitcoin. Every time one of these things mature, they are buying more Bitcoin and becoming more sovereign. I wonder if they could do that. They could say, you know what? Fuck you. We'll just say, we're going to make all these T-bills null and void. Do they have the ability? I don't know.
They have the ability. They've done not the same thing, but something in the same vein with the Russian treasury assets. So it's not the first time. It's funny. You say that if they did that, it would rug pull the USDT treasury, but really it should rug pull the treasury market, right? It's ridiculous that the US can do that not once, but twice if they do it this way too. You can buy American T-bills on Treasury Direct. So you've probably heard this a few times. It's a direct to retail product. So you or me, maybe we can't because we're Canadian, but American citizens can go right to Treasury Direct and buy a T-bill. So there's no middleman, so to speak. I mean, it's all like, again, okay, I know that Boomer is only like half kidding. Maybe he's half kidding. I don't know if he is or not when he says the Fed owns Tether, but it's just so weird how some of this stuff is allowed to operate with impunity. Surely someone realizes the same thing you have just realized, that they have a flywheel to buy Bitcoin on the back of U.S. Treasury interest, and they aren't having a problem. In fact, the U.S. government seems unwilling to actually go in on Tether. So what is it? Like, is it a mutually assured destruction agreement there? Like, what is the rationale? Meanwhile, you see guys like Gensler talking about how securities laws are already on the books and nothing new has to change, and he's fighting with Coinbase publicly. But to me, whether I think Tether is, you know, good, bad, fraudulent, legitimate, they're the elephant in the room, and everyone is just dancing around these guys, right? Someone needs to go at Tether, whether it's the European Union or the United States government or whoever. Let's see what they got. Let's open the books. Let's see if they got everything they say they got, and go from there. My suspicion, Len, honestly, is that they realize what you realize. They realize that they can't really pull the plug on Tether, and they realize that if they go at Tether, my honest suspicion is that they will find that Tether is legit, and the price of Bitcoin will absolutely fucking rip if Tether is found out to be legit by the United States government, and they can't risk that. And I think that the more time that goes by, the likelihood that they come for the king, that the U.S. government comes for Bitcoin, even through one of these adjacent industry players or tokens or stable coins, it just becomes smaller and smaller. Because if you tell a bunch of people that Bitcoin is not legitimate and here's why, and then you're wrong, the price is going to rip. That's going to be the into orbit moment, I think. And so I don't expect them to come for Tether anytime soon, but I don't know. People in the chat saying there's no way Tether is legit. It just seems to me unlikely that the U.S. government would wait this long. You know, like they let the price get to $70,000 on the back of fake USDTs that are insured by Treasury notes, T-bills. Like how does that make sense? Why would they do that? I can't work out the math on that. So if you can think of a reason why they would do that, I'd love to hear it, but I can't think of one.
Let's move on to talk about the United States, how they look like they're scared of El Salvador. I hope Jaime Garcia is still in the chat, because I want to hear his thoughts, at least in the comments section. And this is a story from CoinDesk, and it's mentioned that a bunch of U.S. senators have brought forth a bill, and it is going to enforce reporting requirements on El Salvador's Bitcoin adoption. They have done this with no other country and no other country's ability to or want to bring on a new currency in the country. So this bill is called the Accountability for Cryptocurrency in El Salvador Act. So we have three senators that proposed this: Senator James Risch, Senator Bob Menendez, and Senator Bill Cassidy, three no-coiners that just are worthy enough to be in any hall of shame. And we have the Secretary of State that is going to be responsible for submitting a report on the adoption of Bitcoin as legal tender in El Salvador. And it's going to talk about the impact of Bitcoin adoption on macroeconomy stability, democratic governance, and the flow of remittances from the United States to El Salvador. One day it will be the reverse. There will be remittances going from El Salvador to the United States. Mark my words. And they plan to mitigate any potential risk to the United States financial system posed by the adoption of Bitcoin as legal tender in El Salvador. So here you go. It looks like they have concerns about this, and this could potentially undermine the United States' ability to be a financial juggernaut in this whole system here. So I'll quote here from Mr. Senator Risch. Using cryptocurrency as legal tender could weaken economic and financial stability and empower malign actors. And he says, given U.S. interest on prosperity and transparency in Central America, oh man, the fact that he's doing this, Nick, all the times they rug pulled elections over there and fuck that, then we'll go into it. We must seek greater clarity on how the adoption of Bitcoin as legal tender may impact El Salvador's financial economic stability, as well as El Salvador's capacity to effectively combat money laundering and illicit finances. Now, money laundering, who knows? Cash, it's been king in this thing. The fact that they're flowing in drugs to and from these areas, the election meddling, all this nonsense. They're scared, man. This is proof that they are scared of adopting Bitcoin and what it may do. It will take them away from being shackled to the IMF and indirectly to the United States and be free from it. They don't want this. This is proof of it. So here's three no coiners. If anybody wants to write into them, be my guest.
I have nothing to add here, except that I am really enjoying the coping going on with El Salvador. Still. How is this still going on? What else do you need to see? It's not like if you just take the Bitcoin out, everything else is good. They're paying back their bonds. Crime is down. Tourism up. GDP up. Everything is headed the right direction. The only thing these guys don't like is the Bitcoin thing. Well, too fucking bad. Like, what else can you say, right? I don't know. I have nothing to add to that. Good. Great.
Agreed.
Let's get these guys on the wall. That's all I want to know. When can I expect to get pictures behind them?
So last story I have in a Bitcoin-related front is TD. They completed an acquisition of a company called Cowen Inc. This was done on March 1st. This acquisition was first announced in August 2022. So it took several months, seven, to complete the whole thing. They are now called TD Cowen, and they're a division of TD Bank. Why am I bringing this up? Well, TD Cowen, they provide institutional investors with the ability to buy, trade, and custody services for Bitcoin, USDC, and a whole lot of shitcoins. Aave, Atom, BAT, and it just goes on and on. There's like 30 here I can see. But this, in my opinion, is rather big news because you now have TD Bank, which is a prominent bank in Canada, and even slightly so in the United States. It's still a regional bank, but it's still one of the bigger ones there. They have now one of their subdivisions, one of their divisions, providing institutional investors with the ability to buy and hold on to Bitcoin. I talked about custodial services earlier in the show, that, so I don't want to rehash that, but this is really big news. Now, the one thing I have a question is, because they have all these shitcoins in the CSA, they've been on a warpath against all these quote-unquote securities. Are they going to then remove these tokens, shitcoins from their offerings here? Because why would TD Bank expose themselves to any sort of negativity from the CSA? It doesn't make any sense to me. What are your thoughts?
We talked about this. I thought that that was a bit of a acid test for those tokens, right? Like, TD is going to custody and offer trading services on all those chains. What's that tell you? It either tells you that, it depends on how you view this. It either tells you that they're for sure going to be securities, definitely, and that they'll be the only ones with the chops to be able to offer them as far as trading custody, or it tells you they're not going to be securities for sure and won't matter. And they already know because they're talking to people at the CSA and presumably at the SEC as well. So I thought it was a big deal because, as we've talked about on the show, and as I know firsthand from not only from like my own father, who has like a, you know, Bitcoin and unfortunately other token in his possession, and also my friends who, you know, feel the same way when I introduce them to stuff. Like I paid for a haircut last week in Bitcoin, and you know, I had the that's why I don't have a hat on. The custody conversation is always a difficult one, isn't it? You know, you tell people they got to print out a wallet passphrase, or sorry, not passphrase, seed phrase. It's 12 words, 24 words. You can't lose them. You lose the money, blah, blah, blah. You got to do it right now. Write it on paper, but don't leave it on paper. All this stuff is difficult for people. So it's a bit of a hurdle. I don't love, and I'm sure you don't love, people listening to, watching the show are probably throwing their hands up in the air like, why would you give the bank your Bitcoin? Like, it doesn't make sense. You wouldn't put your keys in a safety deposit box or your seed phrase in a safety deposit box. Why would you ever let the bank? The point is that it's another step in the right direction, right? We want boomers to feel comfortable custodying the asset. And part of this is, you know, maybe going to the bank first. Whether you like it or not, I don't know, listener, viewer, but I just think that it's good that there's a place where Bitcoin now will find legitimacy in the eyes of a lot of older investors, who, by the way, have, you know, what is their share of the total investment pie? It's 75% or 85% or something like that. Something insane. Like, it's about to be the most huge wealth transfer in history when the boomers all pass away and give their stuff to us. So it is what it is, man. It's, you know, pros and cons, ups and downs, and there's good and bad about this. And I don't know, let's see where it goes. Who knows, Len, maybe TD will surprise us, right? Hey, maybe here's a website where they talk about the 24 words and the 16 words and 12 words. Maybe they'll offer a course. I don't know. They put Ben Sessions out of business there. They'll start a YouTube channel and start talking about how to stamp your seed plate or whatever.
You know, things have turned in the right direction when we're able to open up a bank account over there. Until then,
we still can't.
It's all lip service. Maybe
we should we try? I mean, they offer. No. We shouldn't?
I don't know.
You may as well. Like, we got to try.
Sure.
I think we should do a once per quarter video series where we just go to banks and just, you know, like man on the street interviews. But it's like the shitty phone audio.
Do you guys think we can open the bank out here or no?
No, sorry. Okay. They're good.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Clown World news. And I think the biggest Clown World story that is dominating the news cycle is the debt ceiling talk. And this is getting interesting because Janet Yellen is even taking to Twitter and mentioning that they potentially could default on a debt. Now, this, of course, if you listen to Miss Yellen, has never happened in history before. So it'd be basically paving a new path that we've never walked down. In my opinion, this is all just political theater. Why would they even consider defaulting on a debt? It's going to kill their ability to maintain the amount of value they have stored in U.S. dollars. So they're not going to do it. They'll just continually increase it and just go through this whole rigmarole again in the future. It just seems like it's another just, you know, it's how many times did they raise it in the past 50 years? I forget the number.
In last 100 years, Rich Diaz, is either Diaz or Suretsky said this on Dalton Looney Hour last week. It's been around for like 106 years and they've raised it like 90 times or something.
Yeah, so it's one a year. So that's a pretty good. So yeah. Look, the debt ceiling hasn't helped up until now. If they ever do default, I don't think it's going to happen, but it wouldn't be the first default in U.S. history. Let's be perfectly honest. But with respect to how they got here, it's continually running more and more deficits, sometimes very, very large deficits. Yeah. And I took a look to see when the last time the U.S. federal government has balanced their budget. Joey, get this, man. I'll ask you. Okay. Take a guess. When is the last time they balanced a budget? And I'll go on from there because I got a few other things.
There's a big part of me that wants to say Clinton, but probably way before that. Like, gotta be before 71, right? That's the most logical thing to think.
It was Bush Jr. Wow. Okay. 2001 was the last time it's happened.
I was close.
In the last 50 years, and it's 50 years takes us to just after 1971. We all know what happened then. In the past 50 years, it's only been balanced 5 times.
Cool.
That is incredible. That's insane to think about. And so really, it's just continually just adding on to it. It's the deficits. And this is what got us here. Now they talk about this $1 trillion coin that they're going to be minting, or $1 trillion coins. It can't be a singular. Did some math here. If they indeed want to make a single coin, it's just not feasible. In fact, a 500,000 pound, I don't even know how you'd move this, but a 500,000 pound platinum coin, pure platinum coin, would only be worth $60 billion. So if you want to make a $1 trillion coin, it would be humongous and impossible to move. Even a 500,000 pound one is impossible to move. So this whole talk of this $1 trillion coin, I have no idea who's bringing this up, why it's even in discussion here. It makes no sense, because you're going to be backing something with they have this gold they have on their books, which, by the way, they have devalued. The gold they have in their books, I'm not sure if you took a look at it, it's valued at $42 an ounce. It's a significantly devalued. Now, granted, if they did have it all and they released it to the market would tank significantly. But it's purposely kept at a low dollar figure for whatever accounting purposes they need. But this whole thing is just, it's political theater, this whole debt ceiling garbage. Really, this is, I can't talk about this anymore. I'll pass it over to you. And then you know what I mean? Like, we talk it's about nuts. This I so know. Much and nothing gets resolved. Nothing. They're not going to balance the books any further. They're just fucking printing money.
Narwhal in the chat. Accelerate. You're probably right. I can just imagine the Corn Lords guys talking to me about how we need multiple coins. I tweeted the other day that the deficit hasn't been a trillion for 40 years. So they need more than $1 trillion platinum coin. The best part really is that they don't even like patronize me passionately enough to make the coin worth a trillion in metal. They just tell you they're going to print it and, you know, make it like this big and just call it a $1 trillion coin and deposit it into the treasury. It's a way to circumvent Congress, right? This is really the thing that everyone is kind of missing, that there's rules about what the Federal Reserve can and can't do and what Congress can and can't do. And if the Federal Reserve mints a $1 trillion coin, you get around all those rules. Maybe you have a nice ceremony. I don't know.
You got a $1 trillion buffer now.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to compete with the crowning of King Charles or whatever, but you know, it'd probably be a nice ceremony. I'm sure we could get some velvet carpet or something over there. It wouldn't be that hard. Maybe we can send over our best chocolate bar. We like to do stuff like that. So I feel like I'm saying this to myself all the time. Like I'm laughing at my phone screen. Everything on TV that comes out of Yellen, Powell, the media, any of these politicians, any of these other Fed chairs, it's for midwits. It's for the you know, somewhere between 80 and 100 IQ guy who thinks he's way smarter than he is, takes himself way too seriously. Ooh, the $1 trillion coin. Ooh, what are we gonna do? They're not gonna do anything, moron. Shut up. They're going to raise the debt ceiling like they always do. No one is going to default. The U.S. dollar is not going to go to zero. The country's not going to, you know, somehow wind up in shambles and disarray over this. Remember, they don't actually close anything of value. Like, what do they? Someone said this on a podcast I was listening to on the weekend. They call it the Washington Monument freeze because all they do is really like freeze up tourism at the Washington Monument because it's a nice story. But they don't freeze like public service entitlements. They don't freeze military spending. They don't freeze any of the wars. Like when you go to put your money in the parking meter, the thing is going to work. It's all a farce. Everything, Len, the whole thing is just a farce. It's all a farce. It's all like for stupid people to talk about over dinner. And I feel stupid that we're talking about it on our podcast. I don't know what else to say. Janet Yellen comes out with the mushroom cut. She doesn't know what she's talking about. What else is there to, except for these quality comments that, by the way, are getting ratioed to shit on Twitter. Oh, the U.S. is not a deadbeat country. The U.S. has never defaulted on its debts. They get ratioed every time they say something on Twitter. So I have enjoyed that, but the rest of this, like, who fucking cares? Who fucking cares? None of it matters. It's all just
horrible. I think you're just fed up as I am. Like, yeah. We're fed up with the Fed, really. That's what it is. But
yeah,
next story, and I'm going to be super brief because another one, it's in one ear and out the other. The CPI now came in at 4.9% for the month of April. And this was lower than expected. Oh, everybody's popping the corks in their champagne. Look at that. It's officially, it's 4.9%. The Fed rate sits at 5 to 5.25%. And so this is the minimum number required to reduce inflation. So they're there. So anything beyond that is going to be gravy to them, depending on how they fudge these numbers. I have nothing to say about this. This is just another thing that, for me, it has zero value. They could say it's 100%. They could say it's 0%. It changes my life not one fucking bit.
CPI is a lie. CP lie. Okay. As we called it, as our group chat calls it, SB, Will Canada with SB in our group chat, calling it CP lie all the time from the terminal. Look, man, everyone with half a brain is looking at the price of eggs. You know, I bought eggs on sale with my wife yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago at Fortino's. And we usually get the 18 packs because I bulldoze through eggs, tons of them all the time. And that 18 pack used to be, I think, $5. And now it's almost $8. And so it was on sale for $5 the other day. And I like had a stress memory, like, oh yeah, I used to pay this price for these eggs all the time. Right. It was like a genetic memory. Like it's something so deep in my soul. And I just like got zapped by it. And I started saying to Kenzie, my wife, like, what are we doing here? People think the inflation rate is 5%. This shit has doubled in the last 2 years. It's almost a fucking double. Milk, eggs, meat, anything that will make you healthy and strong is up 1,000,000%. Anything that'll kill you, if you want to buy granola bars and sugar crisp, yeah, it's not that bad. But like anything else, you're in the hole, man. And starting to see now, by the way, wages trying to catch up. So let's see. Public service, obviously, we talked about last week. They negotiated a new deal for, I don't know, maybe all their members or half their members. I don't know exactly what the nature of that is. But the thing I'll say to you is that it's only the beginning for wages. Everyone is going to start to realize that everything is more expensive and that 6% number is a fucking lie. And when that happens, good luck. Look out. Hope you got something that's not able to be debased by the political ebbs and flows of, you know, mob rule. But if you don't, then, you know, have fun paying for your eggs. You'll have a genetic memory moment too at the grocery store. Anon, look forward to it.
Just work a second job. That's the best way to pay for everything that's higher. That's what they say. And the economy's doing well. We've created all these new jobs. people's income, it's yearly income, it's gone up as a result of all this. And it just,
yeah, can we talk? We got to talk briefly about this Minister Freeland clip from 2020 or 2021. This
it's old. Yeah, do you want to talk about it in Clown World or you want to do it now? Clown World North.
I don't care. If you want to talk about it later, we talk about it later. It's fine.
Yeah, let's. I'll do this one last story, and then you could lead off Clown World North with that. So,
okay,
the last Clown World International story I want to bring up is about renters in the UK. And get this one, Joey, they are going to be able to borrow up to 100% of the value of a property without a guarantor or without putting up anything. So it's basically 0% down, no guarantor, and you can get a new mortgage. This is a scheme introduced by Skipton Building Society. It's not as bad as we think. I'll explain why. So,
okay.
So property value does go down over time, right? Like this, it's not a guarantee it goes up. So the people that buy in for this with zero down and property value going down too, they're going to get wrecked. But anyways, the fixed rate is 5.49%. So it's a pretty high rate. I mean, maybe it's comparable. I haven't been shopping for mortgages. It's a 5-year 5.49, and it's over a maximum term of 35 years. So I think that's the maximum term in the UK. And how they determine who's able to qualify. So it has to be first-time home buyers, number one. This is how the big catch. Each applicant are not more average than the – sorry, not to have more average than the last 6 months worth of rental cost. So the 6 months that you're paying for rent, the last 6 months, the application cannot be higher than that. So your mortgage can't be higher than that. So essentially, your mortgage has to be lower than your last 6 months' rent. So who is this going to be helping out in the end? The people that have high-paying jobs – the people that just came out of school that have yet to buy a home, these are the people that are going to be able to buy these homes. It's not going to be people working grocery store level jobs. You're not going to be able to afford it because the amount of money you're going to be put away to rent right now is minuscule. I know rent is going up, but still, you're probably not paying the same rent as somebody else is paying living in London. And you're going to have to buy a mortgage that is going to be less than that in terms of your rent. So how are you going to find a home that is going to be very cheap, especially as everything else got up in price? So this is really going to impact the people, the very select people that this is the way I look at it. People that come out of school that have high paying jobs, young, and have yet to have bought a house. It looks good on paper, but the reality is you're going to be helping out people that probably don't need fucking help.
That's right.
They were going to get there anyways. So I see this fucking bullshit. This on the surface it looked awful, but then you look at it, you scratch a little further, it's oh fuck, you know what, there's gimmicks here and not everybody's going to take advantage of it. I thought it was going to be just a free-for-all, everybody's going to get home 0% down, but it wasn't like that. Thankfully it wasn't like that, but still it doesn't solve anything. It's just a fucking gimmick.
Nothing solves. When I listen back to the show, honestly, sometimes I feel like when I get upset about something, my voice gets so high. And so I'm trying to work on that, but I can't help it. Like, what is going on in these, you know, Tucker Carlson voice? What is going on in the United Kingdom? What is going on in Canada? What is going on in all these places where there's a housing problem, man? People are having trouble finding a place to start a family. And it's not that I think every person who bags groceries is entitled to, like, you know, 1,000-square-foot home. I don't think that. But the idea that we're, as a society, obviously this is not in Canada, but as a society, proclaiming at every opportunity that there's a crisis that we want to solve in housing, in affordability specifically, and then the solution to that problem that we talk about, like you said, you know, sort of at first glance, looks great. Insane, but good if you're trying to solve that problem without considering literally any other second order effect. Even that solution, though, is really just geared toward the same people who are going to be able to afford these houses anyway. And also, you know, the alternative is no better, right? I think in the United States now, if you have a higher FICO score, you pay more in mortgage insurance than if you what's going on?
You're
like,
getting penalized for having good fucking credit.
Right? I can't believe it. It doesn't make any sense.
You got shitty credit, no problem. You pay less than somebody that has better credit. It only makes sense to do it like this.
The same measuring stick as like department store credit cards. Like, I remember working at Zellers. This is a deep cut, but I have no other comparison for this. I remember working at Zellers. There were times when if we were short credit card referrals on a Saturday, like we were supposed to get like 30, 35 credit card referrals on a Saturday. 35 new people got to leave that store with a credit card, and that credit card's got to have a balance on it because they got to use it to pay for the stuff they buy to get the discount, 10%. This is like 2005, 6, 7, whatever years I worked there. On the days we were short, I used to go out. They used to hand me, my supervisor, Terry, nice lady, would hand me a clipboard, say, Joey, at 3 o'clock, if we're still short, take this out onto the sales floor and start trying to get people to sign up for credit cards. And when I first started doing it, I thought that it was hard to get people to find people that would get approved for a card. And so I learned pretty quick that, like, if it's a new couple and there's diapers in the cart, like, that's a good candidate. That's a good candidate. They might sign up for a credit card. They don't want to spend $50 on diapers. They'll take the 10%. If you tell them, they can just pay the credit card at the service desk on their way out, whatever. No one ever does. But you find out pretty quickly, Len, that literally they'll give credit to anybody, any schmuck who's got ID. And sometimes even if you don't have ID, if you have like just your driver's license number or whatever, like if you had like an old health card, even sometimes that works. If you called credit services, Zeller's credit services or HBC credit services, it's the same thing going on in modern economies. They're giving credit to the least capable people. And then, Len, when those loans inevitably fall into disarray, who foots the bill?
Well, collectively, we all do. And that's the beauty of it all. And nobody's angry because the banks that are the ones issuing the mortgage, they need to be bailed out. And if they fail, society is going to just be wrecked as a result. So, yeah, everybody's happy. Yeah, so shareholders are happy. The C-suite members are happy. We're not, but who gives a fuck?
It's just crazy. Like, we, as a society now, whether it's governments looking for votes or banks looking to give credit or whatever, everyone is looking for diapers in the buggy, right? That's a figure of speech, a CBP original. Everyone wants to find someone with diapers in the buggy to give credit to. And it's not the way to succeed long term. And it's clear that it's not the way to succeed long term. It's clear that these loans will fall into this, right? It's clear that the losses will be socialized at everyone's great cost, but no one cares because there's no consequences. There's never been consequences. The debt ceiling is fake. The bailouts are fake. The money is fake. It's all fake. Everything is just made up. The only thing that's not fake is Bitcoin. That's the only thing that's not fake, honestly. Like, it's hard. It is becoming, and I feel like that's an extreme position to take, to be honest with you. Some of these like think boys who say, oh, Bitcoin's the truest thing. It's the only truth. 6 months ago, I thought that was horseshit. I thought that was Oasis by the Campfire type beat garbage. And now, the more I see, man, they're onto something there. I don't know if it's the only thing that's true, but they're onto something there. You know, like it's clear that the rest of the stuff is just made up. It's all nonsense.
It's sad when we are looking to code as the ultimate truth. Essentially, it's fucking code run on computers. And the people that are managing the Federal Reserve, Bank of Canada, and all this shit, lost faith in them. And not just because of one decision. Decision after decision, year after year, to get us to this point. There's no way they're going to be able to fix this, and you're just going to be helping out their friends. And those are the people, fuck, we said, no, we don't like you anymore. We're going to trust code. What the fuck do we come to this point? But... Whatever, it's sad. And anyways, let's go to Clown World North. And before I talk about anything, you want to bring up something, a clip.
I just want to, the Freeland clip, right? This is old news. I don't know how people missed this a couple of years ago. This was a big story, I thought, in Bitcoin land. Although it occurred to me later that probably a lot of people who listen to and watch the show are newer Bitcoiners because we started in 2021, I think, right? So it was around the time when that clip was out for the first time. Your savings should never be viewed or discussed as stimulus for the economy. Your job as a Canadian is to find the best way to support you and your family and do so in a way that supports Canadian values, whatever those values are for you. This idea that your savings should be a tool for someone else's prosperity, I think is perverse and sort of the most generous interpretation. And I hope that someone talks about this in the mainstream media. Vassie Capellos is a good candidate. She's been on fire in the last couple of weeks, talking to both sides of the PSAC negotiation, among other people. She's had Macklem on her show, I believe, as well. I would love to have her on this show if CTV would ever let her come on this air. I doubt it, but
Boomer, hook us up.
Yeah, Boomer, if you know her or almost got a date with her or something, time to cash those chips in, buddy. I would love to have her on the show and just ask her, like, it's insane. And Boomer, great point here. You know, it's not just your savings in fiat, right? It's your energy, your work, the time you spent. It's the stuff you didn't do. It's the time you didn't spend with your kids, that you didn't spend with your wife, you didn't spend with your girlfriend, that you didn't spend on a creative endeavor, that you didn't spend doing something you love. You did something you had to do for yourself and your family. And someone else is viewing this as their way out of economic turmoil that they caused. It's completely unpalatable and should be unpalatable for every Canadian. That's all I'll say.
I'm not going to add a single thing to that. We'll just go from there. RBC came out with a report, and they project the unemployment rate in Canada to reach 6.6% by 2024. They also mentioned the insolvencies they expect to jump 30% over the next 3 years. But I want to focus initially on this unemployment stuff. So 6.6%, they're saying by next year. Currently, it's standing at, we're sitting at 5%, depending how you want to look at it. So that's a jump by 1.6%. That's a substantial number. And all this, I think, is they're anticipating the cost of living to continually grow higher and higher, and businesses are going to have to scale back in terms of paying for salaries or for workers or for anything along those lines. And something to go with the insolvency side, the rates of consumers, this is pretty sad, Joey, who are 90 days or more late on their debt service payments have spiked for credit cards, auto loans, installment loans, and lines of credit. They're saying that the insolvency rate is projected 30% over the next 3 years. We've got there because as of March, it has jumped 28% year over year. Yeah. So another 30% in 3 years, that's actually coming down in my opinion, because 28% year over year, that's a higher rate of growth. That's incredible too. The Office of the Superintendent of Bankruptcy says there was 12,000, a little bit over 12,000 insolvencies in March. This is compared to last March of over 9,500. So it's a pretty big jump. Also, February had a big jump of 20% of insolvencies year over year. So this is not just a 1 month trend. This is continual. And this is bad. This is something, this is both taking into consideration consumer and business insolvency. So it's not just one sector. They're taking into consideration everything. This is really sad. So as insolvencies go up, this is something that will trickle down. Credit card companies are going to have to find ways to increase the fees for everybody else because they didn't make the money, the payments from everybody else. Banks are going to have to feel a pinch. And this could have a real impact on everything. When people stop paying their mortgages too, look the fuck out. This is going to happen the way things are trending.
Do you think that you're going to see, I know we've talked about like the expansion of the public sector as far as jobs. I don't see how you can mask this without growing the public sector further at basically every level, municipal, federal, provincial, other sort of adjacent services in you know, small communities, whatever, right? Anything that can be paid for by printed money that can be obfuscated as not being printed money. It seems to me like the natural next step, no? And I know that the closest thing to that would be UBI, right? Oh, we're giving everyone a check every month to help support families, support, you know, pay for tutoring, whatever the Ford government said. But it seems to me like this is a more and more likely outcome every time we talk about this. How else can you paper over this? What are the other alternatives? Credit card companies are going to try and maybe they're going to, yeah, good luck. I'm sure that'll go well. But like,
I mean, that's an option. You're asking, like, these are the options on the table.
You could let it burn through. Yeah. Or like, to your point, credit card companies are going to try and get their piece. Everyone is going to start charging fees, more fees on everything. If there's a chance that these loans are not repaid, I don't know. I think because we spend so much time talking about this, I'm trying to see where the end of this is. And to me, it looks like it's more public sector jobs. Is it not? How else, again, like how else could they possibly?
You can't create jobs simply for the creation of jobs. Well, there's got to be a need for that.
But why not? What about the other policy positions tells you that they can't do this or won't do this or have an issue with it? It just has to be the lesser of two evils, Len. It doesn't have to be the best idea. It has to be the best idea of the ideas that are on the table, right?
The way things are trending
in federal politics, I can't see that there's going to be a massive increase in public service jobs. Provincially in Ontario, they're the way things are trending, I can't see them doing with an increase, a massive increase in public service jobs. Municipally, I can't talk about that because there's so many different municipalities throughout Canada. So just by looking, I'm looking at the tea leaves here, I'm reading what I'm seeing, and I don't see the people that are going to be elected or remain elected that will do these things. You might have something in the meantime, but ultimately it's just going to have to let it play itself out, or you have institute some sort of policy. I mentioned UBI, but I'll talk about something a little bit similar to that momentarily. Those are the options I see on the table. Playing itself out would probably be the most, it would have the longest, sorry, it would hurt the most temporarily, but in the long run, it might be the best. But the people, they don't know, nobody wants that reality. Nobody wants to lose their house.
This is a great fucking point from Chuck. ESG is a fake job creation scheme. The workers are private, but governments pay the bills via grants and such. That's a great point. I wonder how many other initiatives like this there are. Like, are universities public sector jobs?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
If you go look at the sunshine list in Ontario, you can see the professors on the list. Yeah. So maybe not all jobs there, but the more high paying ones. Yeah. But anyways, one last Canadian story I have, and it's about potential election issues that may be brought forth federally to us Canadians. And at the 2023 Liberal National Convention, which wrapped up just recently, there was a bunch of policies, 24 in fact, that were passed, and they are now deemed to be top priorities. And I could go down a list. I'm not going to name all 24, but just the ones that really caught my attention. So, and I'm not going to name what number they are, but affordable housing being one, BRRRR. Primary health care availability. This is something that's going to be a big issue as people get older. Climate crisis, BRRRR. Installing guaranteed livable basic income, GLBI, burn up to the 10th degree. Combating disinformation in Canada. How the fuck are they going to do this? Creating livable, walkable cities to fight climate change. Truth in politics. Fuck that. Is there not truth in politics already? They're going to institute this as a policy. Truth in politics. Anyway. We have food security and agricultural support. This is scary because they don't define what this may be. Could this be just buying up land and then changing grazing of the cows grazing into, you know, anything like corn or whatever?
Cricket farming.
A green transition for the prairie provinces. Again, something BRRRR. Lifting Canadian seniors out of poverty. BRRRR. Modernizing the Canadian justice system. Is it outdated? Helping farmers transition to more sustainable farming practices. What does this mean? Improving community climate resiliency. Is this another 15-minute city deal? I don't know, but it could definitely accelerate. So, oh man, these are going to be some of the things that, maybe all of them, that are going to be on the election platform for the next election. A lot of these come with a huge dollar figure.
One more time, the list you're reading. One smart fella in the chat is asking where you got all that. From the Liberal Convention, what is the name of that list?
So if you go on the Liberal National Convention for 2023, just type in that and policies, 24 policies, and you'll get that list. And there's a bunch of others I took off because I don't think they're noteworthy to talk about today. But a lot of them, the price associated with them, you can't even consider what they are until they're in place. And then you just look through the numbers and say, oh, man, this cost this amount. And in terms of improving people's lives, it's debatable, but all of this, it's going to come at a hefty cost. And man, oh man. So this is going to be something that will be an election issue or election issues coming up. So be ready for this. And the fact that they're talking about it now ultimately will be passed later on. And the reason why I say this, in 2008, they were talking about the carbon tax. Dion came in. That was his big election idea. And a lot of people were moaning and groaning about it. But here we are, some 15 years later, it's now a reality in Canada. So some of these things, they may not pass muster right away and people may not like it. But in subsequent elections, as people, they see it and they're, oh, you know, try it out. Because in federal politics, it's always just one party or the other. So eventually the Liberals will get kicked out and the Conservatives will come in. And then eventually the Conservatives will get kicked out and the Liberals will come back in. Maybe at that time,
Some of what I mentioned will be part of law or policies or regulations. So interesting stuff.
It's a policy roadmap, right? Unofficially, it's just a matter, more a matter of when than a matter of if, as you mentioned. So take this stuff to heart, man. I wanted to remind people that I believe there's a second 10 cent tax coming on fuel this summer as well, according to the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. So again, like very much under the radar, people have kind of forgotten the weather gets nice and Canadians forget about all the things they're mad about 2 weeks ago. Great example here. Let's see if they actually roll that out during the summertime, during travel season. It'll be, you know, expensive to drive, man, but you won't need it, I guess, if you're in a sustainable city. I suppose. Now, do you
remember
the aim.
Remember when HST came into effect? This was, I don't know, 10 years ago now.
Yeah,
it came on July 1st, and the fuel was impacted by it too. I remember I filled up my car the day before just to make sure that I got the cheaper rate. It was only GST that was included, not HST.
Right.
So this is Ontario. I think every other province, different provinces have a different structure. But in Ontario, I remember it was July 1st. So the 30th of June, I went to fill up my car. So this happened before in the past where they instituted a tax to increase the cost of fuel in the middle of summer. So it's been done before. It'll be done again. Right? Right. It's just a reality. Okay, let's move on to the Bitcoiner and no coiner section of the show. And I do have a no coiner, no Bitcoiner of the week. I'm not sure if you have any.
I got nothing this week.
Okay, and my no corner, I'm going to be brief, and everybody should know who it is. It's this guy right here.
Sherman.
Right, so Brad Sherman, and he was talking this past week how, and I'm quoting him, the crypto bros, he was saying, they were making $1 trillion out of thin air. This is because the market cap of Bitcoin and shitcoins eclipsed $1 trillion. And he was mentioning that it was just the U.S. government. They're the only ones, the divine right that's been given to them by God that could create money out of thin air. What the fuck? It's shit like this that drive me bonkers. And he is so indebted to the banks. If you go look at his history, he's been a previous no-coiner of our show. Donations from the banks are massive to his campaign. These are the people, the type of people, the businesses he's trying to pander. And obviously, Bitcoin is going to put a lot of these out of business because banks, they operate in a fiat environment, creating loans and then generating yield on that because there's an interest rate associated with it. This doesn't happen under a Bitcoin standard. Whoever is going to do any sort of interest or borrowing in a Bitcoin standard is going to come with a substantial amount of risk if somebody defaults. It's not like you could then create Bitcoin out of thin air to make up for your losses. So this guy is truly a no-coiner. Every time he talks, I listen because he's going to say something else that's going to be noteworthy. And here's another opportunity that he did that. The U.S. government is not the only one that can make money out of thin air. It's just, unfortunately, we have learned to accept it. But eventually, this is going to come to pass. And this is going to be something that we are going to look at and say, we fucking allowed them to do this. And it will happen soon. I believe that.
Yeah, I think you're right. More and more people are realizing that the money is fake and the people who, you know, decide when and when not to print it are doing so with their own interests in mind and not yours or mine. That's it for tonight. Who you got on Wednesday? Who's coming on?
So Wednesday, we were going to have Jared from MASH come on, but unfortunately he canceled today and rebooked it for later.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it's no fault of his own. He had some, I don't want to say exactly what it is, but he was just unable to attend. He'll be coming on our show in July, so I look forward to chatting with him then. But we were going to do a double interview this week, and so it's now going to be a single interview. Thursday, noon Eastern, we have Jan coming in from Brains. So Brains Pool is going to be on our show. If you have any questions to do with their OS Plus, or their mining pool, submit them. We'll be happy to ask them, and hopefully we'll get an answer that's going to satisfy you. But it's going to be fun because I've talked about Brains a lot in the past, and finally we got somebody coming on from them to come on our show. This is great. So noon Eastern July. On Thursday.
Is there anything else you want to say about that show?
Nothing yet. Maybe something, but nothing yet.
Okay, got it. Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, so that's at noon Eastern because they're overseas. So,
in Czech Republic.
Time, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I think it's a 7-hour difference. So we're happy to accommodate. And thank you to, I don't want to say his name, but thank you to one individual that made this happen. If you want to bring up his name, go right ahead, but I just don't want to.
Our guy?
Yeah, I don't know if I.
Yeah, it's Gandalf. Gandalf is the best, man. Gandalf is the best. He's always so doing
stuff.
He's a big fan of CBP, and we've leaned on him a few times for different things. So yeah, thanks, Gandalf. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, so thank you. I didn't realize if we could say his name or not, but yeah, Gandalf was the guy that orchestrated this. Big appreciation for him for doing this, because without him, we wouldn't be able to land this. So yeah, looking forward to it Thursday.
Exactly, exactly. Len, the price of Bitcoin, American dollars, $27,285. What do you got?
$36,756. I'll take that.
Very strong. Very strong.
Yeah.
God bless you, everyone. Take care of yourselves. Stick around for 10 minutes while I talk to Len, even though I'd rather be playing Zelda. And we'll see you on Thursday when we talk to Brains.
Yeah. Take care and PB.